That's why I had to repeat it, because I'm sure you're wide awake. It's my third time speaking this morning. At 8:30, I spoke at a church in Holly. And at 6 o'clock this morning, I spoke in my neighborhood as I was walking around praying and preaching. That one maybe doesn't count as much, because it was me just getting away with the Lord and preaching out loud as I'm walking through the neighborhood. How's that? Not too bad? I did that last night also. It's very therapeutic. But I just went for a walk, was preaching, and a car pulled up. Some friends that I've known for some years, and they're laughing. And I said, "I'm preaching a sermon. You're the first group to pull, you know, come forward." It's the first time I've ever had a car pull. No, never mind. That doesn't count. I get it. I went to a new adventure this week. I purchased an iPhone. I finally gave up on my Droid. I'm told it was an excellent phone, and I'm sure it was. And I'm sure it's a smartphone. The problem is, it's not the phone that's not smart. I'm not even saying it, okay? I hear you saying it. So I got a smartphone. A number of you know my son, Clint. Yesterday, Clint was invited over to Grandma's house. My mother-in-law, at age 80, which was like 2 years ago, got a MacBook. Her first computer at age 80. She Skypes. It's awesome. However, sometimes the technology doesn't go well, so she asked Clint, "Can you help me with my phone? It's broken." She said, "It works fine in the morning, but not in the afternoon." It's like, "What do you mean?" She said, "Well, look at the clock. It's fine in the morning, but in the afternoon it's a different time." I was like, "Grandma, that's military time." "We could, you don't have to have 1,300 hours, 14." Yeah, she thought it was broken. So he fixed that for her yesterday. At what age, I tried to find this online. You probably could find it, and I couldn't. At what age do you think you understood your parents' phone more than they did? Not yet? Somewhere around there? Young? I mean, I watch it regularly, and it is funny because with a school, I'll be giving a tour to a family, and there'll be some on the phone, and the kid will grab it, and, you know, we're looking at kindergarten, and they're fixing their parents' phone. I was giving a tour Friday night to a family, and they just moved here from Iowa, and they're looking at the school, and they had an iPad, and their son was playing with it, you know, the whole time, and he's changing applications, going between games, and just flipping around with things, and doing all the different noises with it and stuff. It was funny because some of the noises, you're like, I hope that came from the iPad. But and just doing different things, and he's two. And you're probably not surprised by that. The problem was when he tried to weigh himself on the iPad, I think. And he had the ground, he was going to stand on it. He was jumping. You can't jump on your iPad, but, you know, just... The other thing, I got an iPhone this week, but the school took my PC and gave me a MacBook Pro. And I'm trying to learn how to do that. And I made a PowerPoint for today, but I don't know how to send it, so there it is. we're learning, okay? We're getting there. I think children often are not as fearful with computers and things like that because, I mean, we as adults are worried like we're going to lose something and never be able to retrieve it, or it's going to crash on us. And so we're so careful, and you just jump on and go, you know, and it's fine. I want to talk a little bit this, try that again. What I want to talk about a little bit this morning is fear. And just the fears we do go through, because although you might not be afraid of computers or switching to a computer system, you do have fears in life, things you struggle with, things that, there could be some major fears going right now. There may be some students who are going to middle school for next year, and that means like changing classes, and that's a big deal. Some are going to high school, and they've just left being like the boss, and now it's high school. And it's exciting about electives, but what if I don't like or whatever, and the school's bigger? Some are going off to college. And it's that bittersweet time. Can't wait to leave, but don't want to leave. Change can be difficult. It could be a new job. It could be whatever. But there's a lot of fears we go through. So I want to touch a little bit about that. I think last time I was here, I mentioned about a book I'm working on called Little Wild Times. It just talks about struggles we go through. Little Wild Times in John 16 is the whole area where Jesus says, in a little while I'm going to leave, and then in a little while I'll come back. It's to his disciples. And they're like, you know, a little while you'll see me, a little while you won't see me. I mean, what is all this about? And that little while time is when they denied him, betrayed him. He was beaten and crucified, but he rose again. And a lot of times, those little while times don't seem like little while times. It's those struggles, those frustrations that we just wonder, what are we going to do? How are we going to survive this? Maybe you can relate to me in the whole concept of, I don't like it when I'm not in control of my life. When everything else is going on and I don't know, I'm just winding around. I'm lost in it. I feel trapped. And so what I want to look today is at Psalm 34. We've been going through 1 Samuel. I want to jump to Psalm 34 today. And in Psalm 34, and you have Bibles, I believe, under your seats. I saw those being put there earlier. A number of the seats. And you can share whatever if you have your Bible. Psalm 34, David writes this. And I think it's a way to maybe avoid our, I'm going to call them little wild times. Our struggles, our battles, our difficult times. Psalm 34, verses 1 through 3. I will extol the Lord at all times. His praise will always be on my lips. My soul will boast in the Lord. Let the afflicted hear and rejoice. Glorify the Lord with me. Let us exalt his name together. I love this because David starts off by saying, I will do this. I will. And it's a concept where I think in our lives we need to take, I'm not ruling God out of this, but take a little bit more ownership of our lives and say, I will make an action. I'm going to step forward. And it's interesting, the five active words he used here. I will extol, I will praise, I will boast, I will glorify, I will exalt. And then I'm going to start my day off spending time with God. I'm going to start it off by, good morning, Lord. Thank you for waking me up. Thank you for giving me good health. Thank you for giving me something to do today. What is it? Following him, not just taking off on our own. Praising God. Do you remember in Acts 16 when Paul and Silas are at Philippi and they're thrown in prison? If you don't remember, you can look into it and you're going to get to Acts 16 about verse 16. But in Acts 16, Paul and Silas have been preaching. They get taken and they get beaten, thrown into prison, the center cell. Who knows? Anybody following me on this so far? Yes, yes. Anybody play piano? Yes. Okay, never mind. But they're thrown into the center cell. Thank you for helping me, though. But they're thrown into the center cell. They're putting, you know, the clamps around them and stuff, and they're in the middle one, and it says around midnight, they're praying and praising God. I started to think through, if I had been preaching and I got arrested for it, and got beaten for it, and thrown in prison, what would have been my prayer request? As I went to prayer that night, I know you guys are way better than me. You just pity the fool over here, okay? But just my prayer would have been something like, God, can you like take the pain away? A good night's sleep. Released in the morning would be nice without getting beaten again and maybe no humiliation. Anybody else pray? I mean, I should respond because you won't respond to me. But it just, is that a fair prayer request? I think it is. But here we have Paul and Silas praising God. And what caught me about it is when the earthquake came in Philippi, the gates flew open and stuff, and everybody could go and leave. And no one left. Remember when the jailer comes running through, they're like, hey, we're all here. No one left. And it reminds me of this verse. Look at verse 2 again. My soul will boast in the Lord. Let the afflicted hear and rejoice. When we go through difficulties, sometimes we don't go through them alone. You might have a situation at school where several of you are hurting over something at the same time. There may be something with a youth group or with church. It's a struggle through together. It could be a family situation where there's a battle. And our response in that situation affects others. And I think Paul and Silas, who could have complained in the situation by them being positive, the afflicted could hear and rejoice. I believe the words complain and drain should always be in the same sentence together. When someone complains, do you ever feel it just drain you? You know what I'm saying? You can have a situation where in the work, my wife is managing now this for seven doctors, the nurses and that, and she'll come home and it was a great day kind of thing, but so-and-so said this. And we try to figure out why the person said that and how she's going to approach it tomorrow and those kinds of things. And inevitably, it appears that we'll pray about it, talk about it, and the next day the person will come up and apologize to her before she even has to address it. But she's had such a productive day at work, but one person's statement drained her. Are we ones who drain others? Or do we give them life? Even when we're going through a difficult time, and Paul and Silas, I think it's that perspective versus circumstances. If I had the privilege of writing a book with Paul and Silas of their life, what would this chapter have been for them? Thrown in prison, beaten, thrown in prison. Would it have been a low point in their life? Or would it have been like a miracle, exciting high point? What I would have thought would have been a little wild time for them, by perspective, was a positive thing because they got to see God work and people get saved. In our lives, when we're going through things, our perspective makes a difference. Start off by seeking God when you're afraid. Start off by seeking God when things aren't making sense. Because He has a plan, and it will change our perspective. Stephanie, my daughter, those who know her, she's with Lady Antebellum. They're doing a European tour right now, and so she Skyped us a couple days ago from Zurich. And she's just talking to me. Skype is so beautiful. I think I've told you before that the way we Skype is we get to see her, and she gets to see our golden retriever. And that's the trade-off. So we just put the camera down on the ground, and the dog just lays there, and she talks to the dog. And people all tease her because, she's at work and stuff. And so the people will come through, the band will come through, and they're like, "You're Skyping your dog?" She says, "Isn't she beautiful?" But we were talking this last week, and she was talking about her church down in Nashville that she goes to. And she found this church, really likes the church, feels very comfortable with it, the message is very strong, and we visited a couple weeks ago, but she didn't know she was going to a church where a celebrity pastor is at. His name's Pete Wilson. I don't expect you to know that name, but he wrote a book called Plan B. So it's the whole idea, we have our Plan A, and Plan B comes along. We may have had our schedule all figured out. We may have figured out when we're going to go to college and get this degree, and then things change in our lives or whatever, we move or whatever. And it's a Plan B. And so he just got back from a worldwide tour with his book. And so she didn't know that, because it was just kind of funny. But he's written a second book that I'm going through right now, and I just finished 11 of the first 12 chapters of reading it. And it's called Empty Promises. And he says, with empty promises, I will be happy when blank. And he said, he's just gone through life watching people on how they fill that in. I'll be happy when I get to high school. Middle school, when I get to high school, then I'll be happy. Oh, when I drive. when I get my driver's license, oh, I will be happy. Oh, I'll be happy when I have a boyfriend or girlfriend. Oh, I'll be happy if I get into this college. I'll be happy when I get out of college. I'll be happy when, and he just continues with it, this job, well, now this job, well, now this promotion, and this job, we just continue on with it. I'll be happy when I make, you know, for those of us a little bit older, we think about, I'll be happy when I make such and such an hour. And then not too long after that, it's, well, I really would like to make such and such an hour. And then it's like, ooh, I would really like to have salary. And that's like, oh, wait, I'm working so many hours, it might be good if I was hourly again and not salary because all hours. I'd be happy when I get married, when I have a child, when I get a house, when I get a different house, when I get a new car. I'll be happy when. And he says, you know what? Anytime we say God plus anything equals idol, I should be happy within God himself. Of what I should really need is God himself. That what I want is God. That I don't need other things. I will admit, all too often I think of how cool it would be to win the lottery. I've never bought a lottery ticket. I feel my odds are the same of winning whether I buy one or not. But I think about, you know, how many great things I could do for the Lord. Well, maybe myself too. If I won the lottery. I see those billboards like, oh, that'd be cool. What would you do with $20 million? And then I love it when people say, I'm not buying a lottery ticket yet. I wait till it gets to $100 million. I know. I couldn't live off $20 million either. Just, you know, that whole mindset. But it's like, I'll be happy if I had... Why does it keep changing? Pete Wilson, in his book, goes on to say, when Satan tempted Eve in the garden... The temptation really was having God isn't enough. God's holding out. You need something more. If you eat from this tree, you're going to get knowledge. You're going to be like God. So you eat from that tree will give you God plus something. And then that's Satan's temptation. If you're like, oh, you want to be a Christian? Go ahead. But realize you need more than just that. You need... And he adds to it. And whatever that item is, really becomes an idol for us. And we need to be so careful. And it's funny because so often that item could be something that's financial. Yet in our currency, we say, in God we trust. How ironic is that? In God we trust. Oh, I wish I had more money. I wish I could buy such and such. I'd be happy if my student bills were paid off. I'd be happy if I had the scholarship. I would be happy with a better car. It's like, really? Is it really going to work for us? Or is it just going to be replaced by something else? A different idol that I then need plus God. David starts off saying, I'm going to extol, praise, boast, glorify, exalt the Lord. And I really think that we need to go back to the basics of just being full within God, being complete in God, finding everything within Him. Verses 4 through 7, we'll go on just saying that realize that God hears our prayer. I sought the Lord, and He answered me. And I'm back in Psalm 34, by the way. I sought the Lord, and He answered me. 4 years of Greek, 3 years of Hebrew, you know, all my degrees, net. This is pretty deep stuff right here. God hears our prayers. You see how I pulled that out of there? I mean, that's just profound as all get out, right? You know, I like it with David just being open and real with us, saying, I sought the Lord, He answered me. He delivered me from all my fears. Those who look to Him are radiant. Their faces are never covered with shame. This poor man called, and the Lord heard him. He saved him out of all his troubles. The angel of the Lord encamps around those who fear Him. He delivers them. I love those two phrases. That I sought the Lord and He answered me. This poor man called and the Lord heard him. It is neat to be reminded that God hears us. That God is there. when we come to him, and he's wanting us to come to him, that he's ready for us. That when you woke up this morning, I don't care what time you woke up, he was already awake and ready for you. And that as he has a plan for you for this day, he knows that he won't have to say oops anytime today. But with that perfect plan that he has for us to go to him. I think a number of you know that I'm a fan of the TV show Lost. Anybody ever watch Lost? Is it too old for? Okay, good, cool. I gotcha. All right. A lot of spiritual undertones. Now I had 4 books published on it. I enjoy it. It is cool to me. But those who haven't, I get it. It's all right. You just haven't watched it enough. But the season 1, I think it's episode 2. The doctor's name is Jack. They've plane crash, he's injured. The fugitive there, his name's Kate, and he says, stitch up my back. And she's like, no, I don't do this kind of stuff. And she's afraid. You know, sight of blood and doing this thing. She's, you know, and he's like, I'll talk you through it. I'm a doctor. You know, just hold a mirror and you do this and I'll tell you what to do kind of thing. And she's like, I can't do this. I'm afraid. He goes, you know, there's no one else here. You need to do this. And he says, you know, when I'm afraid, I count to 5. I give fear 5 seconds to run its toll. Then I step out in confidence. And so they count to 5, and then she stitches him up and live happily ever after. Or not, maybe they're already dead, right? But those who know the show, that was a good joke, by the way. Later on in the show, she's being chased by a smoke monster, and she's afraid, and she remembers that situation, and she counts to 5 and steps out in confidence, everything is fine. I know it's TV. However, I wonder in our own lives, when fear comes, when we're scared, shouldn't we first, let me say, stop, drop, and pray? Really go to the Lord immediately? And I'm not saying just for 5 seconds, but sometimes 5 seconds would do. I'm overwhelmed. Give it to the Lord. I think all too often we live in a reactionary world. Somebody hits something at me or things are coming on, we immediately respond. And possibly not in the right way. But if I would just take 5 seconds and pray, maybe 5 minutes. Get a proper perspective. Realize I don't have to be in charge and control when God is. And then make my step. And then step out in confidence. If you go down this passage, I'm not going to go through all this whole section, but verses 17 and 18, there's only 22 verses in this chapter, but it says, the righteous cry out and the Lord hears them. He delivers them from all their troubles. The Lord is close to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit. He hears them. He's close to the brokenhearted. I know the phrase I'm going to say right now isn't theologically correct, so I apologize, Brady, for this, but it's those times where we feel God is furthest away that he may be closest. With omnipresence, it's hard to really say that. And I've heard people say that, like, when God feels far away, we know who moved. But I'm going to tell you, when you've moved, God moved also. And when we're feeling brokenhearted, when we're crushed, and we're going to feel that way, God is still right there. And it's not like you have to go find him somewhere. He's there waiting for you. And just speak out. He's there. He wants to respond and help. In Psalm 34, he starts off with saying, I'm delivered from all my fears. And that's interesting because 3 other times, it's just 22 verses, 3 other times, he refers to the fear of the Lord. And he instructs them to have a fear of the Lord. And it really makes sense to me, and I like those little word play things that if you know God, you can have no fear. But if there is no God, then you will know fear. You know what I'm saying with the spelling of those? You know, that's really, really clever. I get it. Be with me on this one for a moment, though, because it's so profound, so deep. That if we know God, why do I have to fear? If God is for me, who can be against me? But if I don't know God, then fear is probably going to be prevalent in my life. The other thing I noticed from this chapter that caught my attention was the word delivered is used 4 times. To deliver something means it was probably captivity, trapped, caged. And I think there are those times we feel that way. And the one who can deliver us from our addictions, our habits, our life is really only Jesus. And to see him for that. Go up higher again back in the passage. I want to go to verse 8. And again, we talk about seeking the Lord, realizing he hears our prayers. But I think the third point would just be to give God credit. Verse 8 says, "Taste and see the Lord is good. Blessed is the man who takes refuge in him." I mean, it's been interesting in this earlier section when David says, "He delivered me, I have no shame. He saved me, he delivers me." Taste and see the Lord is good. I like places like Maggie Moo's and Cold Stone and Gelato kind of place. You know, those places where they give you samples. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. No, you're now responding. Look at this. All right. Okay, I get it. Where it's like, try it. You'll like it. We're so confident you'll like it. We're going to give you free ice cream because once you take a bite, you're going to buy a small scoop for $4. Plus tax and shipping and handling or whatever else, you know, they're going to throw on there. But it's like ridiculous price, right? But we know once you taste it, you'll have to have it. And it's kind of interesting here where David's kind of like saying, try Jesus. Try the Lord. Try it. You'll like it. I've been in so many counseling sessions where the person will say, I'm not, my relationship with the Lord's not strong right now. I'm not spending time with him. And I know it's so much, it's so funny because it continues on. I know it's so much better when I start the day off reading the word and praying. My day is different. And maybe you're already at your young age. I understand what I'm saying with that. But those times where we start looking to the Lord, not that we never have troubles, but changes our perspective and then just our direction. And so when we're spending time with him, life just, it's so much better. And I just encourage you that taste and see the Lord is good. I've really enjoyed the years of being involved in this church and that Brady still allows me to be involved here because it's been so special, firstly because of who you guys are. And then there's a lot of sentiment there. I mean, my allergies are starting to bother me right now, obviously. But, because I wouldn't cry because big boys don't cry. But the whole history here and watching people invite friends. And I am racist. I place the Chinese way up here. I love the Chinese culture. I hope you do. I know you're all American, but please enjoy the Chinese culture also. Something I like about it, and I have gained to appreciate more and more with age. And it was funny because earlier we were debating whether or not I have more gray hair. If I have less hair, maybe it's less gray hair. It just looks more gray. But whatever, that's a whole other topic. As I'm getting older, I appreciate more the whole concept of people who are willing to think. And the people who have been brought to this church who are willing to think, and for us to say, taste of the Lord, see that he's good, that I can be so confident that Jesus has the answer to what we need. We can say, taste of it. That with all the intelligence of the world, I don't have to be intimidated. I don't have all the answers. But I don't have to be intimidated by what questions come. Because I know he is the truth. And that has been so encouraging for me. And you know, I'm so humbled with, you know, ACT scores. I think I spelled that right. You know, that's just, you know, the things that come from this church and the people that have come from here, and realizing that I'm going to go into a doctor's office, somebody, and the person who's going to save my life I had in middle school or something. You know, just the, you know, just those kinds of things. And but really, if you're visiting, if you've never gotten to the point where you've tasted of the Lord and seen that He is good, I really encourage you to do that. If it's been a while since you've had a meal and your taste buds are a little numb or whatever, you know, go back and taste the Lord again. You have some time now, probably more than you'll have during the school year, to start forming a good habit of spending time with Him daily. And I'm not just into, you know, give Him that X amount of minutes. I'm really into a relationship with Him throughout the day. You're just in constant conversation with Him throughout the day. That it's not that I set it, but this time is God time, this time is my time. They should work together. I encourage you to constantly go through a conversation like that. I think we give God the credit by counting our blessings, to be careful about comparing and keeping up with others, that whole game that's played, but really seeing that, you know, what does God have for us? I'm glad I got a little more time. I broke some preaching rules today. I hope you're okay with that. Normally we start off with the context of the passage. Today I started with the passage, and I now want to step back into the context, because I continued my series today in 1 Samuel. And believe it or not, over the last couple of years, we've gone through the first 20 chapters of 1 Samuel. We're now in 1 Samuel chapter 21. If I was to look at, you have your Bibles with you, right? You're looking at Bibles with me? There is a, what do we call it, superscription above it? Above Psalm 34. Is there a phrase there? Probably starts up with, of David.
Yes.
Thank you! I love you. You know that. Just yes. For the rest who don't read English, we'll take our word for it. Right? Of David, when he pretended to be insane before Abimelech, who drove him away and he left. That is in the actual text. If you were talking to someone who's Jewish, or if you're using a Hebrew commentary, that is verse 1. Now, if you go to Acts 16, it will probably say something like, Paul and Silas at Philippi. That was added by man later, just to give us an outline of where we're at. But in the original manuscripts, verse 1 is, of David, when he pretended to be insane before Abimelech, who drove him away and he left. So then we have to see, when did that happen? Oh, conveniently, that's 1 Samuel 21, where we'd be at. And I want to take a few moments there today of just, why did David write Psalm 34? What was he thinking when he wrote Psalm 34? What did he just go through? So 1 Samuel 21, if you want to go to there, we go there together. David goes to Nob. Ahimelech, now, I just have to take a moment with this. Ahimelech is the priest. Abimelech is a title that means king. Okay? So in Psalm 34, it refers to Abimelech. When you go to 1 Samuel 21, we're going to see it later, the king's name is Achish, but his title is Abimelech. So I have Ahimelech and the title Abimelech, just so... I know you're even more confused now, but let's just continue, okay? So when he goes to Ahimelech the priest looks at him and says, David, why are you here alone? David has some other guys with him, but it's a situation where he's running for his life from Saul. Saul wants to kill him. Remember the past messages, because I'm sure you just remember every word I've spoken, that Jonathan's involved in helping David get away. And here he runs to him, runs to Ahimelech, and he says, I need some food. And Ahimelech says, yeah, the only food we have here is this consecrated bread, the showbread. And it's interesting because he eats that, and in Matthew 12, Jesus even refers to David eating that. And so it's brought up again. We know that in the background is a guy named Doeg. Should we just call him Dog? But, you know, what's up, Dog? No. But Doeg the Edomite, who's Saul's head shepherd's there, and he ends on being a tattletale, squealing on Ahimelech for helping out David. So he tells Saul, and, you know, horrible things happen from that. And David writes about that in Psalm 52, of his response and what he thought about that. David asks Ahimelech the priest, you know, I was in such a hurry, and I need to step back for a moment. When Ahimelech the priest asked David, you know, why don't you have anything else? He says, I'm on a special mission from the king. He flat out lies. Now, I've read commentators that will say, well, he's not really lying because he's on a mission from the king. And I'm like, no, that's lying. If you are trying to make the person believe something else, you know, the deception, that's lying still. Okay? So I think David flat out lies here. I need a weapon because I was in such a hurry to help out the king, I forgot to grab a weapon. He says, the only thing we have here is Goliath's sword. So David had killed Goliath earlier and took his sword, and here it was stored. He says, that will be great. Now I'm in 1 Samuel 21. I'm going to go to verse 10. Gave you a summary, kind of a verse 1 through 9. I summarized those 9 sentences quickly in about 25 sentences. That day David fled from Saul and went to Achish, king of Gath. But the servants of Achish said to him, isn't this David, the king of the land? Isn't he the one they sing about in their dances? Saul has slain his thousands and David his tens of thousands. David was so afraid of Saul that he just took off running. I think sometimes when we have that fear come about, we just like wander, we just take off. Maybe not as much physically as we do emotionally, mentally. We're just all over the place. And it's one of those things, it's like, I don't know where I'm going, but I'm making great time. Believe it or not, David goes 23 miles. He's running from Saul. He goes to Gath, the hometown of Goliath, carrying Goliath's sword. There's bright, and there's not so bright. Well, just say, I mean, verse 12, David took these words to heart and was very much afraid of Achish, king of Gath. So he pretended to be insane in their presence. And while he was in their hands, he acted like a madman, making marks on the doors and gates, and the gate, marks on the doors of the gate, and letting saliva run down his beard. I don't remember ever seeing this in a little drama form. It'd be an interesting part to play. David's so afraid, so scared. What I say when it's really bad, you're us-scared. I can make up a word for it, but it's just like things are going so bad for him. He then pretends to be a madman. God bless you. He's got saliva coming down, scratching everywhere. Verses 14 and 15. Achish said to the servants, look at the man, he's insane. Why bring him to me? I love this next verse. Am I so short of madmen that you have to bring this fellow here to carry on like this in front of me? Must this man come into my house? Must this man come into my house? I mean, don't we have enough crazy people around here? I don't need another one. And so he lets him go. On that situation, based on that, is where Psalm 34 is written. And coming out of that and being rescued or delivered, think through it again with me, Psalm 34. Of David, when he pretended to be insane before Abimelech, who drove him away and he left. I will extol the Lord at all times. His praise will always be on my lips. My soul will boast in the Lord. Let the afflicted hear and rejoice. Glorify the Lord with me. Let us exalt his name together. I sought the Lord and he answered me. I'm looking at the passage saying, David, I'm not sure you sought him. I don't read that part. I don't remember where you sought him and he answered you, but I'm going with you on this one. He delivered me from all my fears. Those who look to him are radiant. Their faces are never covered with shame. Maybe a little bit there, David, when you had like the drool coming down, you just kind of like, be careful there, but this poor man called and the Lord heard him. He saved him out of all his troubles. The angel of the Lord encamps around those who fear him. How beautiful is that? The angel of the Lord encamps around those who fear him, and he delivers them. Taste and see the Lord is good. Blessed is the man who takes refuge in him. I guess what I really like about this passage is first of all, it's God's word. Okay, you understand that. But what it really relates to me is like, David's so real. David is one who struggled, who had fears. But his goal was always to praise the Lord. And I will do this. And in a time that could have been very embarrassing for him, in a time that could be a very down point, he turns it back and says, wow, even when I mess up, the Lord's there for me. And it's that reality. It's that whole thing where, Brady and I will let you know that we don't have this all down. We're not, I'm speaking for myself now, I won't speak for you on this also, but I'm not perfect. I have struggles. And I think you've always known that with leadership here, that people are real, and that the people will go through difficult times. But we're always seeking the Lord. And we know the answers are found in him. And we really encourage you in the same way that we know you're going to go through tough times. We know you're not going to be perfect. But please keep coming back. We know what the destination is, but really the journey has so much value to it. And we want to take that journey together. And really that journey is going to go smoother for you if you seek the Lord daily, realizing he answers prayer. And don't forget to give him the credit. Taste and see the Lord is good. Let's pray. Father, I thank you for your word. I thank you for these real historical stories that we can learn from, where we can watch someone else's life who struggled, and you blessed them, you rescued them, and knowing that we can come to you and you'll be there for us. I thank you for loving us, even though we're not the most loving people. But thank you for placing love in us so that we can love. And I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Every tear I've cried, you hold in your hand. Never left my side, and though my heart is torn, I will praise you in the storm.
I remember.
I remember when I stumbled in the wind. You heard me cry to you. You raised me up again. My strength is almost gone. How can I carry on if I can't find you? And as the thunder rolls, I barely hear you whisper through the rain, I'm with you. And as your mercy falls, I raise my hands and praise the God who gives and takes away. And I'll praise you in the storm, and I will lift my hands. You are who you are, no matter where I am. Every tear I've cried, you hold in your hand. You never left my side, though my heart is torn. I will praise you in the storm.
I lift
my eyes unto the hills. Where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. I lift my eyes unto the hills. Where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth.
Now praise.
I'll praise you in the storm, and I will lift my hands. You are who you are, no matter where I am. And every tear I've cried, you hold in your hand. You never left my side, though my heart is torn. I will praise you in the storm.